Hello and welcome to episode 117 of the Playthrough Podcast. I'm Jim Middleton and I'm here with Andy Gilmore.
Hello, good evening.
I was going to say that's your cue, Andy.
Yeah, I was going to say, I had something that I was going to say, and I'm so discombobulated after all that headphone faff that I completely forgot. It was going to be something Dark Soul related. That's what I was going to say. I was going to say, yes, indeed. That was going to be my opener, but it's kind of lost now. That moment's passed, but hi, all the same.
Prithee.
Yes. Yes, it's giving me conniptions. I'll tell you what, these headphones were giving me conniptions, but here we are.
And I'm also joined by Mads Christensen.
Praise the sun.
Praise the sun.
Always.
No Chris tonight.
No Chris.
We were having some scheduling issues, weren't we? I'd done my bad dad thing and we'd arranged to record on one day. Didn't realise at the time that it was my lad's birthday. And then, so I couldn't do that day, and then Chris couldn't do today, and
Don't make excuses for him. He's been consumed by Dark Souls. He's basically playing it 23 hours out of every single day. He's sat in like some sweat-soaked pants, just playing it continuously.
Barely eating. Evil.
Yep.
Yeah. I think we might as well just admit why it is that he was happy to bow out of this recording. I mean, it's hurting the three of us. Not going past the staging point was just too much for him, I think.
I think, yeah, it's trying to control the uncontrollable, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then Mads broke the embargo first and went off way beyond the staging point.
I was speaking of a totally hypothetical situation in my chat. There was nothing going on at all. And it turned out it was you I was talking about. And I like that. That's the angle I'm working.
Yeah.
And then it turns out, yeah, you'd already gone past it. And then I admitted to it as well.
I don't think anybody in our Discord chat is actually the point they're saying they're at. I think everybody is significantly further ahead in the game than what they're willing to admit at the moment. But
yeah,
Dark Souls does that to you.
I'm going to say that I think I've been well behaved because I haven't battled any bosses outside of the staging point. At least I haven't done that.
I've not beat a boss outside of the area.
Okay. That's fair.
I've not beaten all of the bosses outside of the
area. That's where we're at.
Yeah.
But we are not. We're not talking about anything outside of the staging point today. We'll just be discussing the first parts, of course.
And despite our best efforts to set fire to it, there is a structure to it all.
There is
a structure which we announced.
For anyone who hadn't gathered, we are talking about Dark Souls 3, our first game of the new series. So for anyone who's just joining us, maybe for the first time, we're playing through the FromSoft games before sort of diving into our own picks. So we are up to Dark Souls 3, having covered Souls 1 and 2 and Bloodborne for the podcast.
Yeah.
And then we played Demon Souls without recording an episode, didn't we?
We played it
sort of ad hoc. Before we dive into Dark Souls, we just want to say a quick thank you to everyone that came over to the Arcade Club meet a couple of weeks ago. Incredible weekend.
Fantastic.
Amazing weekend. Let's do it again.
Yeah, I'm ready. Next weekend?
Next weekend.
Yeah.
I think we would if we could. I think given how successful it was and just what everybody seemed to be seeing at the end of it, then, you know, if we can make it an annual or even a twice annual event that allows different people to get along at different times, then we've always done that anyway. There tends to have been a late year and an early year meetup. Sometimes it's just been three or four of us. Sometimes it's been maybe seven or eight. But this time, I think at the most, we were up at about 21 or 22 people, I think. It was absolutely fantastic. And, you know, people coming from near and far as well. I mean, just obviously a special mention going out to, obviously, to yourself, Mads, for getting all the way across from Denmark. And then obviously Mark, who was all the way across from Utah. It was lovely to catch up with him. Yeah. Obviously, we've spent so much time speaking to him on various podcasts, but never actually getting a chance just to He gives a good hug. He gives a good hug to Sir Mark. Then obviously Reese was along as well. Just like, obviously it's so many people. I don't want to even check too many people because everybody made such an effort to get along, but just some people that we hadn't seen for a wee while. And then quite a few new faces as well. So yeah. I think it just really spoke to the strength and depth really of our community and how nice everybody is. We were just saying that the first thing I said to my wife when I got back was it was just so nice hanging out just with like-minded people. There wasn't a crossword said, and maybe unless somebody beat your high score potentially on one of the machines, but other than that, it was just such a lovely bunch of guys to hang out with. So just a second that, Jim, thanks so much to everybody who made such an effort to make it what it was.
Yeah, it was a great crowd. I think Friday night I was talking to Don, and he said something that, or maybe it was Don or Riz said something that you always say you should never meet people that you met on the internet in real life. But this is a good example of that being absolute nonsense in this case, because such nice people. We had a great weekend. So it was so good to put faces to a lot of names.
Oh, totally. But I think our community is the exception to the internet rule, to be honest, because it's the same with our Discord group. It's just such a nice bunch of guys as well. And again, there's never a crossword in there either. It's unless somebody's posting a spam message, Jim, that gets deleted and makes it look like somebody's referring to you.
Yeah.
Still one of my all-time favorite posts. But what a weekend. It was absolutely fantastic and just lovely to hang out with everybody. It was really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But shall we dive into some Dark Souls 3?
Yes.
Before we do, I'm going to throw out the usual spoiler warning. So this one's going to work a little bit different because it's not one of our picks. Normally when it's one of our picks, whoever's game it is will host the episode, but we're going to do it. I'll do the intro and everything and then hand over to Andy for running us through the areas that we're covering in this section, which is going to be the Cemetery of Ash, the High Wall, the Firelink Shrine, and the High Wall Lothric. Yep. So spoilers for those three areas. We will try to keep any spoilers that we've seen of stuff like that's after that. We'll try to not spoil. We'll just keep the spoilers to the areas that we're covering where we can.
Yeah.
So that's the spoiler warning for that. I suppose we don't really need to. Obviously, with Dark Souls 3 so far feels like a best of 1 and 2 with a hint of Bloodborne and Demon Souls as well. So just to warn you as well, we may at some stage be referencing the older games as well for anyone who's really sensitive to spoilers.
Yep.
But in terms of release date, it came out 2016 on Xbox One and the PS4 and PC. It then got DLC, so two lots of DLC. They were combined for the Fire Fades edition, which came out in 2017. So they were the, let's have a look, I've got it down here somewhere, the Ashes of Ariandel, that came out in 2016, and the Ring City, which came out in 2017. We haven't said, have we, whether we're going to do the DLC?
I think we decided against it, right? On the game.
And then maybe we revisit. The only issue with revisiting DLC in Souls games is it's never like an addition to that. Like embedded into the main game, isn't it?
But that just gives you a chance to play the game again, Jim.
This is true.
It's a chance to do that all-important fifth run, sixth run, seventh run.
Yeah, yeah. It was announced 2015 at E3. Has anyone gone? I had a quick look at some of the E3 stuff that was announced in 2015. Oh man, and what an E3 show that was! So that was like almost like peak E3. So you got like Horizon. So PlayStation was still at E3 then. You've got Horizon, Halo 5, which turned into a bit of a dud, but Gears 4 was announced. Nintendo wasn't particularly great, but there was the Mario Maker got announced. Yeah, it was a bit of a blockbuster E3, that one. The trailer doesn't really give a lot away, to be honest. It sort of just covers a lot of stuff that's in the trailer is in the that opening cinematic that we get when we first find
it. That doesn't give anything away either, so yeah, no worries there.
No. But in terms of critical reaction, 8s and 9s, there was 1.7 that I saw from Polygon, but I've not dived into any of the reviews yet. I don't know about you guys, but I like to do like the reviews and the cane and rinse and everything else, if there is one, after we've finished the playthrough of the game. Mm. Just so it doesn't...
Make up your own mind first.
Yeah, that's it, mate. Yeah, yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
And then that takes us pretty much into the actual game, I suppose. What are we all playing on?
So, Jim, we need to start by having you explain the story. You always like to say what's going on, so I challenge you to tell me what is actually going on in this game.
I'll give it a go. So this one's set in the Lothric Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
There's an apocalypse coming on because the fires are fading.
You see, I didn't understand. Were the fires fading or were they coming back? And that was the problem. Because we need to find the Lords of Cinder, right? The Lords of Cinder have walked away from their thrones. So that's what we're doing.
We have to go and find them, beat them, and that will make them go and sit back on their throne.
Is that to quell the fire or reignite
the fire? Reignite the fire. Okay, all the fires are linked and they're all going out.
So and actually in Firelink, where we... the Firelink Shrine that we'll get to very soon. There are 5 thrones. You can read on the backside of them who's supposed to sit on them. So I guess those are the guys we're looking for.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's about as much as I sort of garnered from it.
And getting them back on the throne probably means beating them in battle.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah. Herding cats.
Yes.
What are we all playing on? I'm on the PS5.
PS5 also, yep.
Yeah. And I'm playing on the PC.
How's it running on the PC, Mads?
Smooth. It's very nice. It's not a beautiful game, is it? It shows its age a bit. And even for a 2016 game, it's not a beautiful game. When you say that games like Horizon was probably about the same age, this doesn't look anything like Horizon. But it's a great game, and it looks just as good as it's supposed to, because I just want that gameplay.
Were there any mods or improvements on the PC version? Is there anything that you can run on it that's...
I don't know, mate. I don't know. I'm just running the stock version that I bought on Steam. So
okay.
Yeah. I'm running it, of course, then in some weirdly high resolution on the PC monitor here. But if you guys are playing it in 4K, you've got the same stuff, I think. It looks pretty much the same.
Yeah. 60 in it on PS5. Solid 60.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it is for sure here on the PC as well.
Yeah.
So that's good.
I think on the PS4, it got a PS4 Pro boost.
Mm.
Yeah. But I think, Chris will be playing it on the PS4, won't he?
Probably.
Yeah, he was still, I think he was swithering a little, but I'd imagine he has done.
Yeah. In terms of in terms of character creation, shall I go through that and then you can fire away, Andy, if you want?
Sounds good. Yeah, like a little bit of build discussion.
Yeah.
So what did you go with, Jim?
Well, we obviously, the last Souls game that we all played was Bloodborne. Mm-hmm. And it felt like there was no, you can go through that as a magic build, but it's really difficult to do. I remember Morpin sort of plotting out what you have to do, and it sounded like you can do it, but it wasn't sort of designed to be done in that game. Whereas this brings back proper character builds with classes, with weapons are back.
Mm.
Just, it feels like you could play through this game multiple times and have a different experience every single time, which is awesome to get that back. It's one of the things that I missed in Bloodborne.
Mm.
I went as a pyromancer build, so that gave me an okay dexterity. I normally go with like a dex build on this, but I love just like how cool it is, just throwing fireballs around and all that sort of stuff. So this gives you enough faith and intelligence to be able to have magic or pyromancy from the off. So I did that, and then for the first few levels, upgraded my decks to get me to a good enough level, which we'll cover later on. And my character is called Gimli, as in Gimli from Lord of the Rings.
Gimli of Chloin. Oh. Very good. Yeah, I went for Mercenary. My preferred playstyles for all these games is Dex Build. If only because it simplifies the process of the game, I think, rather than having to worry too much about all of the mechanics, is that my approach to the game is, if you can't get hit, you can't get hurt. So you just chop and roll all day long. So that's how I played Dark Souls 1. Absolutely loved playing it that way. I did a subsequent playthrough as a pyromancer. That was great fun as well, actually, especially when you start getting some of the high-level spells. Yeah. They're really cool.
But I remember remember in Dark Souls 1 once I got to that level where you could start throwing around the high-level pyromancy stuff, the game just... I think that's one of the things then, the way that it just fed into the game more for me. I just started enjoying it even more.
For sure, and I think that seems to be the case. That's probably my equivalent of that is playing as a Dex Build, where I love just being able to. It suits my temperament, I think, where if I'm under pressure or if I panic, I just start button mashing. And I think if you've got a Dex character, you can get away with that to a greater extent because you'll traditionally have a bigger stamina bar, and it allows you to go on the front foot a bit more, so you can get right up in somebody and chop, 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 chop. Roll out the way, chop, 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 chop. So imagine the song you're wanting to ask.
I'm not sure you'll have bigger stamina bar with the pumping points into dexterity here.
From a dex build, you would traditionally build up your endurance and your dexterity.
Okay.
So that you've got lots of, they'll tend to be quite fast attacking. Mm. And so what you want is particularly in this, you want to build up your vigor initially, so you can you want to build that up enough so that you can survive being one-shotted, particularly by some of the bosses. But the whole idea is to really avoid getting hit in the first place, and then you're going to focus on your endurance so that you can just keep hacking away at people, and then you've always got one or two rolls left to get out of the way. Yeah. And then particularly with this, one of the best dex builds you can do, which is ultimately what I went for, is that if you go for the mercenary character, they start with quite a high dex stat anyway, and the sellsword twin blades that you've got for this is slightly higher level stuff, and I appreciate some people are playing this for the first time ever. This is the sort of stuff that if the game takes you, you can start to poke around with and have loads of fun. But the weapons that the sellsword starts with, that the mercenary starts with, they scale with dexterity. So weapon scaling basically means that the more points you put into something, the more damage output you'll get. So with this, if you keep boosting your dexterity, it boosts your attack at the same time. So you can start to, obviously, you can have different weapons, but the starting weapons are actually the best. So it was so refreshing, I think, because Bloodborne, I find I was sort of having to shoehorn myself and my playstyle into a bit of a character. I thought the biggest disappointment with Bloodborne for me was the lack of character creation options. It just felt like you had maybe two or three playstyle options that you could go for. I think there was kind of a halberd type option, an axe type option, and a sword type option, wasn't there? There wasn't anything like the breadth or depth that you get through Dark Souls. So it was so nice to see this. But also, I've tended to find it in the other Souls games, you've maybe had to, although the starting stats favour how you're wanting to play the game, you still need to kind of mould it a little bit to get your playstyle. But this game just seems to have, like you were saying, it almost feels like a greatest hits where they've taken some of the best bits of the previous games. And there seems to be, I think, a reasonable difference between the different starting builds. And by going for the mercenary, it was basically exactly the character that I would want to create straight off the bat. And then you're really just... you're not really changing the kind of the balance of the stats. You're just adding into them more and more and stuff, so that you're kind of effectively scaling that character to play in the same style the whole way through the game. But it's cool. It's exactly the character I would have wanted to create. It's so much fun.
And I have read as you can re-roll that character as well, same as in the other Souls games. At some stage, there is an item or a character that you'll meet.
Yeah, and I believe you can do re-roll. A maximum of 5 times, I think. So it's not limitless, but okay. I think you can do it 5 times within the game. So yes, a mercenary, Lord Picorthy, that is who is who my character is. He's the usual wee wiry Scotsman who is whose size belies his strength and will. And Mads, what did you go for?
So I always do a strength build in the Souls games, and I thought I was going to do that again, so I picked the warrior, which is a good all-round strength build. He's got this huge battle axe that he starts out with that's actually quite cool. I leveled that up twice because I thought I was just going to stick with that forever because I liked fighting with that. But then I got curious because you guys have always been playing with the katanas, haven't you?
Yes.
Some of the older Souls games. And I had that Uchi Katana or Uchi, whatever it was called, Uchi Katan.
Yeah.
That was, that you find just right outside of Firelink. And I thought, nah, I'm going to put points into the dexterity instead this time. And now I've got the dexterity to use that, and I'll be trying for a dex build. I have never done that before. I've always had strength builds. So, big swords and a shield. I love parrying and stuff like that. But this time it'll be no shield most of the time. Maybe a small parry shield for the big bosses. And then just jumping around and having a dexterity build and using that Uchi Katana or whatever it's called.
Yeah. And in fairness, that is what works really nicely, is that if you're doing a dex build, you really kind of want to focus on those parries, because if you just got one of the small, I think it's the buckler shield, is the one that's got the, there's two or three, they've got the parry shield's got the most generous parry window. So although you'll pay for it if you mistime it, you've got the best opportunity of putting in a parry in the first place. So it's so much fun. Either there'll be some enemies that you can run around and you just, especially with the Uchi Katana, you're just two-handing them, and then there'll be the odd one that you come up against where you'll switch and you'll get your little parry shield out, and then you can parry and riposte. It's so satisfying.
There's a new mechanic here because you can parry and riposte, but there's also you can stagger people like you could in Bloodborne. Both can be done. Right now, I don't have enough endurance to actually do anything about it most of the time, because when people get staggered, I'm out of endurance or stamina anyway, so I can't do that finishing move. But sometimes you get that doom when they step back, when you're just pummeling them as well.
It's so nice to be back to this combat.
Yes.
You know, having just finished God of War, we were obviously really enjoying. You know, there was good parts, that a lot of stuff that we really enjoyed, but we said, if we had a penny for every time during that record or the recordings of our playthroughs, we would say it's good, but it's no Dark Souls. You know, you come back to this and you just think, was I misremembering it? Am I being too kind to it? But it's really not. It's lovely. It's
I must have spent 2 hours running around killing the same 4 knights in this game.
Yeah,
just to practice, just because I liked the combat and I never got bored. I mean, I never do this kind of stuff. You know me, that's not me in games. I hate it. I hate respawning enemies and stuff like that. But in the Souls games, it's just, I'm just honing my skill. I mean,
they do that funny, funny things.
What
to
is
you.
He? The purple eyed bastard. He hasn't killed me once. I've got him every single time.
Nice. Oh, he got me at first. Yeah, he got me.
No, he hasn't killed me once. I'm just rolling around him and stabbing him.
How I was going to say, obviously coming off Bloodborne, where parrying, being able to parry was critical in that game. I haven't lent into parrying at all so far.
I find it hard here in the early game.
I've done it
successfully a few times as well, but I can't do it like consistently yet. I need to find a better parry shield, I think.
Yeah, so I think the buckler shield, and then there's what is the other one? There's one that you can get quite early on that's red and white.
Yeah,
I have red and white
actually.
Paint on it.
Yeah.
That's a good one for it. And then there's another one that is it's like a small metal shield that's got 4 studs on it. That's meant
is that the green one? It's like got a shade of green to it or something.
I don't remember its name. I'll have a look in the guide and find out. But I'm the same. I definitely, compared to Dark Souls 1, where you could quite reliably parry everything, I definitely haven't quite got my eye back in with this yet.
No, and,
but also, they mix it up. There's some good attack patterns where they will pause for that brief second or they'll sell you a dummy. And I stand there and swing my shield and I'm like, oh no, I know what's coming now. But
God of War, you get that really visible cue for a parry.
Yes.
Hmm.
Do you wish that was in,
no.
in this?
No.
It's
yeah, I love it. It forces you to learn the enemy movesets rather than just look for a signal and just kind of ignore everything else. But there's plenty of times I wish I had it, definitely. But the game wouldn't be better for it, I don't think. Because then when you do it, you realise that it's a bit more skill based, definitely.
So speaking of new mechanics, like the new that there's both the parry and the stagger form when you can get that extra damage in. I love the new two handed magic move, or whatever you want to call it, that's the war cry or whatever it's called, that you can do. So if you have two-handed on your axe, for example, the battle axe I had, and you hold down the left trigger, he'll power up and then he'll do this attack where he runs into the enemy and just swings he pushes them back and just swings the axe down on them. Great. I love that. I love those extra moves. I find it hard to use the ones on the Uchigatana, because I think I just haven't understood how they work yet, the two special attacks it's got. But on that battle axe, that was great. And apart from that, running and doing a heavy attack, for example, is something you can do in this game, because you get to stagger and then overwhelm the enemies as well. I often start battles with big enemies like that, just run in, slash them, and then roll back when they try to hit me again.
Yeah.
You don't, it feels like it just, that has come in a bit from Bloodborne as well, where you don't have a shield in Bloodborne, and you can bring that into this where you don't have to rely on the shield as much if you don't want to. So at the moment, I'm sure that might probably change later on in the game, but at the moment you can get away with the rolling and there's no, it's in the Dark Souls 2. We had that. Was it an agility stat that you had to build up before you could roll through attacks effectively?
Yeah,
that's gone.
That's gone.
Now
yes,
in Dark Souls 3.
Yeah,
yeah.
And then another big change was the Estus Flask is back.
Yes,
they obviously they got rid of in Bloodborne, didn't they?
Thank the Lord.
Yeah, and so there's no more grinding for health and stuff before you can go on a run.
No, that's good.
It's a much better mechanic. It just reinforces that, which we'll get to later on, is that when you're starting to get to points where you're dying frequently, is it just, particularly on boss runs, where you just want to go time after time after time, you want to start on the best possible footing. So... I guess we'll get from Chris. He can maybe give us a quick update at the start of the next episode, what he ultimately rolled. I don't know what he was playing as. Did he say?
I know he was using the spear.
Oh, right enough. Yeah, he was saying he's a turtler.
Turtler, that's it. Because that's how he went through Demon Souls as well, wasn't it?
Yeah. I guess we've got a bit of a mix. So a warrior, a pyromancer, and a mercenary. And my
warrior, by the way, is called Nobby Nobs, because I always name them after Pratchett characters. So had to be Nobby, of course.
Very good. Yep. So we do a character creation, and then we get, I think, what you were referring to earlier, Jim, that came from that you probably got a wee bit of an insight into the E3 presentation with the proper opening cinematic, a classic Dark Souls opening sequence, deliberately vague, deliberately obtuse. I've watched it a few times. I've listened to a couple of podcasts that say it's worth revisiting a few times as you go through the game, because the further into the game you get, it's the more sense it starts to make in terms of what they're referring to. But it wasn't making a whole lot of sense, other than the fact it just, if there's one thing it does, the combination of the art style that they use and then the voice cast as well, which I think are a couple of the original voices that were in in Dark Souls 1, wasn't it? And then the way they introduce, which I thought was cool, was just the way they introduce the enemies that you'll ultimately be coming across later in the game.
The giants are back.
Yorm the Giant.
Dark Souls 2.
Pretty awesome.
That was so cool. That bit where you went down into the giants area in Souls 2. Yeah.
Really cool. So by the time I'd created my character and watched that cinematic, I was all in. I was just thinking to myself, we're back in our happy place here. And
I'm already dreading facing the Abyss Watchers, though, because you know that's going to be a multiple enemy bossing. That's going to be a nightmare, isn't it?
Yep.
Yep.
Just stock up on dung pies.
Indeed. Yes. So we watch opening cinematic, and then the game itself starts with showing us actually rising out of a grave this time around, doesn't it? Because the last time when we, selling DS1, I'm trying to remember how DS2 started, but selling DS1, you were just basically thrown into a cell. So it wasn't apparent whether you were alive or dead, particularly.
Dark Souls 2 starts off where you see your family sort of disappear, don't you? And you when you start to hollow, and then you're in the woods.
That's right.
And then you meet up with the, I can't remember what they're called now, but it was the old ladies that wear the red sort of cloaks. Yeah. And I think the vendor in the Fire Link shrine is one of them. Or she certainly seems like she's one of them.
Yeah,
that's probably true, yeah. So this one, whether it's a grave, well, it's either a grave, but it also looks like we're kind of in a big pile of ash when we come out of the grave, doesn't it? And
and they refer to you as Ashen One, don't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then we basically are just straight into it. So this opening area is the Cemetery of Ash, which there are a few people in our Discord group that I think are throwing themselves in at the deep end and are playing this as their first Dark Souls game. So it's hopefully they've been finding it okay. It still seems to be it sounds like a couple of them are at least enjoying it or sort of getting to know its quirks. But it's a short section here where it's the standard making our way through a couple of pre-placed enemies that aren't going to put up too much of a challenge, with the usual soapstone messages on the ground to tell you, to teach, expressively teaching you the mechanics. So it's all, the one thing I need to get, do you guys know how to kick?
Yes. Yeah. Forward and L1 or L bumper if you're on Xbox, I suppose. R1. Forward and then
R1.
Once you start that forward motion, then tap L1.
Yeah.
L1 or R1?
R1. I keep saying L1. R1.
I can't get my guy to do it. But regardless, so I failed that tutorial. But other than that, there's just a few enemies to pick off as we make our way around it.
Mm.
There's one area of interest. Mads, you can probably tell us a little bit about that and the importance of heeding warnings.
So this was, I picked up the game, just played it for 5 minutes before we even started because I couldn't help myself. And
I already breaking the rules before we even started.
No judgment here, Mads. You're in your safe space. Chris isn't here, so you're okay.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. So I played it just 5-10 minutes. I killed all those regular enemies. It was good fun. It teaches you how to backstab again and all sorts. And as you say along the way, that we have these messages and they say just sneak up behind people and press R1 to backstab and so on and so forth. And then you get to, when you're at the end of this little area, you can walk straight to go out of the area and down towards Firelink Shrine. Or there's a little detour to the right, and there's a sign in front of that says turn back. And of course, turn back, that's a challenge. So I went in there and I got my ass handed to me by this spiky blue monster that rolls around and shoots stuff at you. And that's when I put the controller down and said, yes, I'm back. when the text, you died, appeared on the screen.
It's like a giant crystal lizard, isn't it?
A ravenous crystal lizard, supposedly. Yep.
So getting back to the game now, I beat it on the second attempt. I thought I was going to spend a lot of time there, but it wasn't that bad once I got back to it. But
yeah, I think if you went for it straight off the bat, then before you've kind of got your hand back in particularly, then I guess it probably is quite a tricky encounter. But I think if you revisit at any point after you've been to Firelink Shrine, you would...
Oh, yeah, it would be easy.
Yeah, I went back after a few hours of playing.
So I did it without playing first because I wanted to do it when I was at level 0, when I just started. And it wasn't that bad, but it was a sweaty palm fight at that early stage, jumping around, not getting hit because he could two-hit kill me at that point in time. And I couldn't do much damage.
No, it'll take a while to dodging and chopping. The other thing that we pick up here, which I think is a change, is we pick up the Ashen Estus Flask.
Yes.
Which changes quite fundamentally how you play the game. So I think it's a fantastic mechanic. So it looks as though I don't use any magic at all, but I assume mm-hmm. that is what you would use your, that is what your magic is depleted from.
Yeah.
And later on when we get to Firelink Shrine, you can change the balance of them. So whatever, yeah, so however many number, whatever your total number of flasks is, you can later allocate whether you want all of them to be health regeneration or whether you want some to be magic and some to be health. And so I guess, you know, there's a real kind of tactic, which for me is fantastic, because what I don't want, you know, it just means that I can have all health regeneration. I don't want any magic faff, because it would just be wasted on me. I'm not ever going to use that. But then likewise, for people who probably just primarily want the magic, especially because I think you can get a lot of healing spells. So you would be, you probably want it all to be in the sort of the faith points or the Ash and Estus flask, or you can have a mix of both. So, and you can also, you know, obviously it's not set either, so you can tweak it based on which boss you're going to fight or what area you're going to go through. So it's just quite a cool new mechanic. I liked that. I thought it was
I like that. And again, it leans into this sort of, you can tailor your character build, because you'll have you might come up against the boss who's susceptible to like fire, so you might need some fire spells. So you can go back and redistribute your Estus to, so it's a little bit more easier if you've got a more sort of magic lean, pyromancy leaning, for that boss fight. I think it's great. They used it in Demon Souls. They had the magic meter in Demon Souls, and then I think I don't remember it being in any of the other games.
No. For me, it's just one mechanic too many, because I'm not a magic user, so I just allotted it all to normal health potions, Estus flasks.
Same, and it's lovely that it kind of caters for both. So that's a little tutorial there. We come up the hill and we come to our first bonfire, which must be one of the most just satisfying and relieving sounds that you can hear. I think when you walk out and you can always hear that little twinkling noise and you hear the fire crackling, the number of times that you'll have just, not at this point in the game, but certainly in other games, and there will undoubtedly be points in this game where you're just so relieved to see that, and then you light the bonfire, and then that's you then kind of properly off and running. So
I know you said you didn't think it looked great, man. So I thought this, when you get up to the top of the cliffs and you can look out onto like the skybox, and I thought it looked fantastic.
It looks good. It's a beautiful game. It's just
in comparison to like Horizon.
Yeah, in comparison to other stuff that was out at the same time, it's just a few years behind that in fidelity, right?
But what I do love is the draw distances that the game employs, so that though maybe the sort of the textures, etc., aren't anywhere near as detailed as maybe in the likes of God of War, which wasn't that far behind it. Horizon, as you said, it was pretty much concurrent with it. As an example, you can go and stand up outside the front of Firelink Shrine and look back down towards the start point, and you can just see a tiny little glow that's the bonfire that's there, or you can see way off into the distance. So it's little things like that.
I never tire of that. When you, like you say, you look back and you can see where you fought Gundyr.
Yeah, well, that's it. So,
and the wonderful thing about the Souls worlds is always how they wrap around on themselves, so that you'll be going through these tunnels and fighting, and you think you're far away, and then you open the door, and I'm back here again. So it's the same when you get some height here, and you can look over the there's so many points that you can recognize and try to place. In the world, that's just great that they've made it like that.
I think, as I understand it, I think it's a wee bit more linear than what DS1 was, where I think there was so many shortcuts and backtracks, etc.
I found quite a few already, I think.
I don't think it necessarily links up in this to the same extent that DS1 did.
It uses the sort of Dark Souls 2 and Demon Souls sort of level structure, doesn't it, where you go off down a level into like an area, and then within that area is where all your shortcuts are and everything else. And then you warp between the bonfires to get to the other areas. Whereas in Dark Souls 1, it's more of a, I know you can still warp in Dark Souls 1, but it's more of a
continuous world, isn't it?
Yes.
It's all kind of joined. So So we come down the hill, a few enemies to fight along the way, a few goodies to pick up, and then we walk into, which, if you've played a Dark Souls game before, right away the alarm bells start ringing. Oh, yep, there's a boss arena. And there's a corpse that's slumped over a sword in the middle of it, of a, what looks to be a big knight, and you know, edge towards it, waiting for the health meter to appear and the music to start, and nothing happens. And then you think, okay, maybe this is just them kind of messing with me here.
Yeah,
and there's a big door behind him, so you think, oh, that's fine, I'm just going to leave him in peace and I'm going to go open the door and be on my way. And then obviously you get to the big doors and there's nothing, there's no prompt to open them, so you have to return back and say, right, well, clearly they intend for me to interact with this in some shape or form. And then I think as you approach this, there's the option to, I think it says, to pull a coiled sword from which you do. But it's worth noting rather, is that this is the first time you see he's got this kind of black goop on his back, doesn't he?
Tentacles or something.
Yeah, it almost looks like venom from Spider-Man or something.
Yeah, it does.
Something like that. Just like, and you think, okay, this doesn't look particularly great. So you pull the sword out, and unfortunately, that brings him back to life. So this is Yudik Skunder, the first of the boss fights. A good one to get back into.
Yes. Yeah. How surprised were you when that second form came on?
Very.
Very.
Me too.
Yes.
I had him down to half health on the first go, and I thought, I'm doing all right here.
I was thinking to myself, I'm going to be able to post in Discord that I beat the first boss on the first try.
Yes,
look at me, haven't I great?
And especially because in the other Souls games, the first boss was always optional.
Yep.
Mm.
And so I'm thinking, well, I'm doing all right here. And then it quickly went pretty wrong.
Yep.
I think I got him down to like a fifth or a sixth of health on the first attempt, and then that second form ate me, and then on the second attempt I got him instead.
Good man. Yeah,
it took me a few more goes before I dropped him.
All bosses we've seen within this staking point have been for me so close on the first and got them on the second.
I think that's quite satisfying. I'm saying this like it happens regularly, but I sometimes think it's quite disappointing if you get them on the first go, because you sometimes want the encounters to be a bit more drawn out. But the first stage very much plays like your classic big human character fight, which are my favorites. I love those ones where it's quite sort of telegraphed move set, dodgeable attacks, quite easy to get around behind them and chop away, etc. But the second phase, like I say, when all these kind of extensions burst out of them, I'm not 100% sold on this within the game. I don't like it from the point of view. We'll see a couple that are later on as well.
Yeah,
I think it's deliberate. It's clearly a design choice. If it makes it very hard to see where and what the enemy character model actually is. And
especially with the other ones that we see later on, because they just look like normal characters.
And if you're trying to dodge around them, if your attacks or your strategy is relying on dodging, I sometimes find it can be, as you dodge or roll around them, you can just get a big black mass in front of the camera and you're desperately trying to roll out the way to see where he is and where is it. So it's not always, but, you know, clearly it's a bit, there's nothing in these games that isn't deliberate. And I think it's probably their way of mixing things up and making it, I'm probably getting better at it. I've had more practice now, but with this being the first time you saw it, you thought, oh, this is something new to work around here.
Then they hit hard as well. Even like the low level, I suppose they're like hollows or something, aren't they? Yeah. Even the low level characters, they hit hard once that.
They've killed me a few times.
Google Abyss or whatever it is that comes out.
It looks just like Resident Evil 4 when they when they sprout these extra things.
Yeah,
they're called the Pus of Man.
Oh God!
Yeah. So nice. It sounds very appetizing. so we beat Urix Gunder on whatever attempt, and hopefully for the first timers in their boss fights, got maybe their first experience of shaky hand syndrome, and they were able to open up that gate, which then opens up a very Bloodborne looking area, in fact, almost like
massive Bloodborne vibes.
The hub go back at the what was that area called in Bloodborne?
Oh, where you have the doll. You go and level up with the doll.
What was that called again? That was the... Anyways, whilst you were there, it's sort of a cemetery on a hillside that you've got to wind your way up. There's some enemies around it, and at the top of the hill is Firelink Shrine, which is going to serve as our main world hub. So we make our way up there. Again, classic Dark Souls, where you're just... on the first, you're picking your way up there so gingerly and so slowly. And, you know, now by this stage in the game, you're out there running around left, right and centre without a care in the world as to what's out there. Did you guys go straight into Firelink Shrine or did you have a poke around?
I had a poke around.
All the way around first.
Yeah.
Yes. So you came across Uchigatana Man.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hunter's Dream was what it was called in Bloodborne.
Hunter's Dream, that's exactly what it was. Well remembered. Yeah. Yes, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, a few things that you can do here, one of which is if you want a good weapon early on, is you can either try and beat this guy fair and square, or you can spam him and you can try and get him to roll off the side. And
he can do that.
You will, yeah, and you'll get his weapon that way.
It's a tough fight.
It is tricky.
Because he can, like, pretty much two hit kill you.
Yep.
I got him in the first go. Just I just discovered the special two-hand attack on my axe, and he's susceptible to that. He's walking down some stairs towards you. So if you just stand back and power up that left trigger or L2 attack, two-handed L3. Attack, he'll walk straight into you, and you'll push him back and just whack him with the axe. I did that 2-3 times, and he was dead.
Yep. That's something a powerful move then. That's a useful one to have. But you get the sword from him, which is a good thing. You don't have, I think depending on your build, I didn't have enough strength or dexterity to wield it two-handed at this point with my
character. Yeah, I didn't have enough dexterity until much later.
Yeah.
I think the pyromancer started off with about dexterity 10 or something like that. And you need 16 to one-hand the Uchi.
Right.
So I had to level up quite a bit before I could use it.
What are you using for weapons, Jim?
What, now?
Yeah.
Or at the start?
No, now. What are you using when you're a pyromancer?
Uchigatana.
Okay. I thought when you were a magic user, you'd have something else, something that would level up your magic instead.
So I've got Uchi on. I'm doing like a Dex Faith build. So
Pyro Ninja.
Pyro Ninja.
Nice.
So I'm still throwing fireballs around with the left, and then the right is the Uchi.
Okay,
and then
swapping out
for the kite shield as and when.
Nice. Glorious build. Mm-hmm. Did you guys glitch up onto the... Well, it's not even glitching. You can do it. Did you guys go up onto the roof?
No, I didn't realise you could do that until after I'd dropped, was it like 40 minutes of grinding?
Yeah. So have you guys...
How could you get onto the roof before you get the tower key?
So where their tower key is, you know, there's the... that tree that's, I think, like, it's almost like the corpse of a giant that's, you know, the tree that's here that drops, I forget, like a giant seed or something that it says that's not ready to fall. But just outside the entrance to the tower, if you turn around, there's a tree, a fork with a fork in the middle that you can run towards it, and you can run up the bottom part of the tree, and just before you reach the fork, if you then jump, it takes quite a few attempts, but it's not even glitching. It's obviously designed to be that you can then land on the tiled roof and then run around the side, and then there's a window that you can climb in there, and then that gives you access to some of the stuff that you would be able to get with the tower key but much earlier on. But most importantly,
it's right next to the tower, isn't it? When you get the tower key, it's right next to the tower.
So you can go meet the two crows that live there, Pickle Pee and Pumperum.
Pumperum.
me, Pickle Pee. It's brilliant. I was in stitches. I loved it. I didn't know.
It was silky smooth, wasn't it? Silky smooth.
And there's a couple of other things that you can drop down that are pretty useful to get early game, to be honest.
Yeah, I was sad to find you can only do it once. Like, I think Was it embers yes. that were made into shards or something like that? And I thought, wow, great, I've got six yeah. of those. Just give them all of those. Give me some shards. Yeah. But after I gave them one, they just said, nah, no, I don't want any more.
Yeah, there's only one trade and for each of them, sadly.
I didn't realize as well. So I dropped one in. And then I remember in the old Souls game, in the other Souls games, you had to sort of like walk away and yeah. then come back.
Mm.
I did yeah. that and the item, but I'd shut down the game or something and the item had gone and I'd lost the
ability. Yeah, so you won't get it back. Get that's that. Right. Yeah. So it just basically, it's a, I think it's an instant trade effectively that
it is. Yeah.
It will drop it, you pick it up and that's it. So yeah, don't do that. Yeah. So we head into Firelink's Shrine. Were you surprised when it showed up as Firelink Shrine? Did you expect Firelink Shrine to be in it?
I did, because I'd already heard off of mm-hmm. another podcast. There was
I didn't know that we were going to see this.
No, me neither.
Oh, cool. I wish I'd not known. Yeah.
I've got no idea in terms of what we were mentioning earlier, in terms of chronology or in terms of its place in time and space, where this world fits in with. In many respects, it feels like a direct sequel, but in other respects, there's no correlation between the two games. And as to why this is Firelink Shrine or the Firelink Shrine, I've no idea. But I just like the fact that it said Firelink Shrine.
Yeah,
and was it the same music or just similar music?
It's similar, isn't it? It's similar.
It's the most relaxing.
Like, there's enough there that it's close enough. If that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, it was basically very reminiscent of the first one.
Do you prefer this to Majula?
I much prefer this.
You prefer
stop.
The filing.
I love the fact so far. I just cannot get enough of this, because I think, as you know, DS1 is an all time, but probably it is my favorite video game of all time, I think. So this feels very much like a direct sequel. And that just probably, you know, that continue, the more you explore Firelink Shrine, the more that continues in terms of some of the characters that are in here. So did you guys go and have a good rummage around in here and see who you could find?
I did.
Of course. Yeah.
There's a guy, what was his name? Leonhard?
Yes, Ringfinger Leonhard.
Ringfinger Leonhard, who's got the hunter's outfit on. Mm. I was like, oh, I want that hunter's outfit.
So I didn't find him until about 5 hours into the game. I didn't know he was there.
Okay. But once you speak, have you spoken to him?
I have.
And he gives you something like a fire.
Cracked red eye orb.
That's the one, yeah, for summoning. I think it's to do with the multiplayer side of things,
yes.
isn't it?
Yeah.
And then once you speak to him, you leave and when you leave the shrine and come back, he's gone, and you have to do a little bit more of his quest for him to come back. But you can, if you want to, you will get access to his clothing later on in the game. But you can kill him, and get his clothing, which I fully intend to do once I've got him back in that shrine.
You've got to be careful in this game, though, because some of the people that you can kill can also help you in some way, I think. I haven't read about this at all, but there are a few characters that I promise to help, and then they disappear and say they'll come back and help me later.
Yeah.
Yes.
The prisoner?
Yeah, exactly. He gives you a bone or something, that you need to find somebody in the undead settlement that needs that.
Oh, it's a ring. It's a blue
ring. Okay. Yeah.
And then you take it to, I presume it's his like partner or something. I don't know. But when you find
somebody called Loretta,
he wants
you to find. Yeah. It's a bit vague as to all, but yeah.
But then,
is it a blue tearstone ring? I think it gives
blue tearstone ring. That's it.
It gives you more damage when you've got low energy, I think.
Which is the last thing you want. That's a terrible idea.
Well, no, I think, does it not mean that it gives that your damage output increases when you're low on health?
Oh, yeah. I presume. I thought it was the other way around. You take more damage.
I think it's almost like a last resort type thing where your damage output will increase. No,
that makes more sense.
Andre the Blacksmith is back.
Yes.
He is.
Yeah, one of my favourite Cornishmen. Yeah. There's the Firekeeper herself. Mm. There's the Shrine Handmaid that you were referring to there, Jim. One that you're saying. And then there's the guy called Hawkwood, who takes the place of the crestfallen warrior from the first.
Yeah.
I mean, they're a doer bunch, aren't they? He doesn't hold out much hope, but there's not a huge amount of conversation. And then what's his name? There's the little king that sat up on the throne as well.
Yes.
I missed it as well, Mads.
I haven't seen that, I think.
The middle throne or the fourth one along, there's a tiny little king sat on one of them.
He's really thin, isn't he?
Yeah.
Okay.
I love this game. He'd been there the entire time. And I could have sworn I'd explored this place from top to bottom and I'd missed both Leonard and this guy sitting on his throne, just minding his own business. I don't think there was anything by any way of great revelations from any of them, was there? Very little. I'm always trying to exhaust.
Oh, I did speak to... So after I'd got the tower key and went and got all that sort of stuff, went up to the top of the tower and you get like the firekeeper's soul.
Yes.
I think it is. And then you take that, give it to the firekeeper.
Did you give it to her?
Yes. And she mentioned something about a dark... There's like some dark sign mechanic. Yeah.
So when you give her the firekeeper's soul, she takes it into herself and that gives her the ability to remove the dark sign from
us. That's it.
But we don't have the dark sign yet. So that's another
mechanic I guess we'll come across in the future.
Maybe it's like being cursed or something later on that she can remove that.
Because I've kept that because which one was it? I shot myself in the foot early on in the first game. Did we not get an Estus? There was something I think we got quite early on when we'd got the...
Oh, I know. There was Estus shards, but then you do something with the Estus shard to power up your Estus flask. And I think, didn't you consume the shard or something?
I think so, yeah.
Can you? Okay.
Not in this game. In DS1, you could.
You could.
But if you held on to it and gave it to the maiden that was in the prison, then she gave you an extra Estus, I think.
She gave you an extra Estus shard, yeah, that's right, yeah.
That's Andre's job here.
Yes, so worth mentioning, yeah, so he's the guy who we speak to when we want to change the sort of the quantity of each bit. Yeah, I just had a good run around here. Do you want to quickly just talk about because have you done the tower yet, Mads? Were you going to do the tower?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah, so we've done it just because it's attached and it saves us coming back to it. Obviously, you can farm 20,000 souls, which initially seemed like an extortionate amount, but by just before the stopping point, like you were saying, Mads, there's a good bit to farm it there. It doesn't take too long. And you can head on in. There's some good stuff in here. Did you kind of rinse it? Do you think you've got everything that was in there?
I think I did. So. Yeah.
There was an illusionary wall.
Yes. So there's there's an Estus shard, isn't there?
Yeah.
Then you should also be able to get the covetous silver serpent ring, which gives you, I think, an extra 10% of souls if you were wearing it.
That's the one that's behind the illusionary wall.
I haven't found any illusionary walls. I hate illusionary walls.
I didn't think they were back in this book,
no,
but they are.
Me neither.
They are back.
Okay, so I need to get back to that area. I haven't got that ring.
You need to start wall humping again, Mads.
Oh,
yeah, that's it.
I hate that. That's the most stupid mechanic ever.
if you're into your fashion souls, there's a set of the Firekeeper's robes, and then there's an Estus ring, which gives you a boost every time you take a sip of your Estus flask. It restores a greater proportion.
I don't think I got that either.
I didn't get these until much. Well, I guess probably you would need to be just about this staging point to be able to reliably farm that number of souls. But I guess you could access it from the first area, and then from that point onwards. And by this point in the game, when you think about how many souls you've probably spent, if you'd had an extra 10%, that's got to be worth an extra 2 or 3 levels minimum.
Yeah, I was running from the first bonfire in the high wall down the shortcut, and then that takes you to the winged knight you got on the left. So do the winged knight, and then you've got the four knights in the next. And then I was just doing that for a loop for about 40 minutes to get the 20,000.
It doesn't take long. So that kind of covers off Firelink Shrine, and we're going to obviously come back here repeatedly every time that we want to level up, every time that we want to upgrade weapons. This is basically what we'll return to. But for now, we're pretty much done with it. And we approach the bonfire. We have to, somebody, I don't know who it was, it said, so you've got, it stumped me for probably a minute, but I think somebody spent a lot longer. You have to put the coiled sword into the empty or into the ashes, don't you, to then reignite the fire. But you have to stand in quite a specific point for it to give you the prompt. Yeah. And I think somebody was,
I had a hard time with that as well.
Yeah, it definitely took me a bit of, I think very annoyingly, somebody had written a soapstone message right next to where the prompt would come up. And so it was. I was interacting with that rather than giving the option to stick the coiled sword in. So it's. But once we've done that, we then. I guess maybe compared to DS1, is it from this point onwards? We're always warping to whatever world it is that we're. There, it's obviously in the same time and space, but there's no physical connection. It appears between the two of them. So something. Interesting to think about as to why,
how we connect. Because at the end of this part of the playthrough, we fly to the next area.
Yeah.
So they've got to be relatively close.
Yeah.
But those gargoyles have been flying us around Souls games for a while, haven't they?
Yes. Yeah, they're our old friends. So the first one takes us to the high wall of Lothric. So we appear up on one of the ramparts of Lothric Castle, which is kind of largely still intact. There's not really, it's not a ruined castle as such. It's just that it's obviously been overrun. You've got the option, I think, if I've got my bonfires right, you could go left or right here, couldn't you?
So if you go, was there three ways off this one? There was.
Oh, it's just left and right.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, there was a left and a right, and then there's, if you go right, there was two ways off that one.
Yeah, so you could go to the rightmost one and take out the guy who's the sniper that's there.
Yes,
and then you drop. We'll cover that one, I guess, just because it's. It's got quite a quick dead end. As you drop down there, there's a couple of dogs, a couple of quite like bigger guys that we've come across now. One's got an axe, one's got a kind of a big halberd. They took a wee bit more to get a measure off. And then you go up onto the next rampart, which is where we've come across our next, if you've gone that way, assuming that's your first kind of standard pus of man, where you run up onto the area and there's probably five or six enemies up there, one of which has got a crossbow. So you're that busy focusing on him that you don't notice this other guy. Took him out, went to go and hit this other guy, and then all of a sudden he bursts into this transformation. And
Really small area, enclosed area, isn't it?
So yeah, he killed me.
Yeah,
I took a beating of him a good few times. You can kill them before they transform, as long as you get in there quick enough. But I've not worked out whether or not you get an item drop in that instance. I don't know if it's the case that...
I don't remember.
Maybe it might just be random, but I think I've had both gems and shards from these guys when I've killed them in their final form.
I think I've had a titanite as well.
Yeah, like a titanite. That's what I mean, like a titanite shard.
Mm. Yeah.
But I think they've always been in their transformed state when I've taken them out.
Do they regenerate?
Yes.
So do the drops will be there every time? So if you was to...
Random drops, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know if maybe the first... The first time, there's some enemies that the first time you kill them, you'll get a guaranteed drop. And then the rest is just down to random. So that's really all there is for this. Double back and
there's a longbow down there as well, wasn't there?
Oh, there is. Yeah, you're quite right. Yeah, which is about to come in very useful because we go the other way. We come down and we're onto another rampart where there's just a load of people that are benign, just completely ignoring us, most of them praying away. I think there's one guy that'll attack, but if you aren't quick enough, there's somebody who comes up the stairs that's got this lantern that lets out this shriek that basically is almost like a call to arms, and the people that were previously completely indifferent to you will start to swarm you a little bit, so you just need to run and take this person out. That is then where, once we drop down through that, there's a couple ladders that we work our way down through, isn't there? And then we pop out at a lower rampart. It's got two levels where the first time there's a high and a low path that if we, I think it doesn't matter which path you go to take, to be honest, but whichever way you do go, especially if you go to the top route, which I went first, it looks like there's a whole load of goodies there. You're like, oh great, I'm gonna go and have go and stock up, and just as you do, a dragon swoops down and lands on the wall just like in DS1 and does its best to, or does cook you multiple times. I didn't think you could get past this. I thought it was maybe like the DS1 dragon where you had to get it off the wall. You could never you could, but you had to be very, very good with your timing. But yeah. I gave up on this area and just carried on, but I didn't realize.
Well, you just stuck to the low area after that.
Yeah. Because you were taking damage from the fire, but it is, you do actually have enough health to get into that door if you need be.
So have you been back since and gone?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you remember what's in there?
Yeah. You not kill, but make the dragon fly away. I mean, I just ran up there, stood in the doorway, and shot it with my longbow. And it doesn't take many shots, actually.
It doesn't. No, maybe 20 or something like that, is it?
Yeah.
And then when it's almost dead, it'll just fly away.
Yep. Yeah.
And you get a titanite chunk, something like that.
I think so. Did you go into that tower and down into the basement?
I did.
Yes.
And I got killed.
Yeah. What killed you?
It was a damn treasure chest, a mimic. And they're back.
They're terrifying. It's the noise they make. It gives me the creeps. They are.
Oh, it's horrible, isn't it?
Just I hate like mimics.
Yeah. Just horrible, horrible character design.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. Yeah, they give me the heebie-jeebies. That's all we can do from there. So you ultimately have to retrace your. The advantage, I guess, of keeping the dragon alive initially is that you can kite all the lower enemies towards you and he'll just fry them, and then you can just run straight past them. But
I used it for baiting that knight as well, for the before I felt brave enough to take on the knight.
Yeah.
I baited him down there. Then leveled up and got a little bit braver.
I kited him down there, and then he followed me too far, so he was just at the edge of the dragon's fire, so he wouldn't he wouldn't walk back into it. So I had a bit of trouble taking him out. But then once we've taken him out, we then come into a room where there's the option of going out a door and up some steps, or we can go down the way. It's a classic 50-50 choice here. I went out the door and doubled back on myself up the stairs, and there's there's another bonfire up there, which was just is delightful. But if you were to go straight ahead when you go out that door, that opens up a significant extra chunk of the level. So I guess we'll come back to that in a second, because if you go down the way, that ultimately takes you down to the prison, which is where Grey Rat is, but we can't get him out at this point because he's
we can't even speak to him.
Yes, yeah.
There's a Esther shard down there as well, isn't there? If you're brave enough to go all the way down to the bottom, there's an area I think there are a couple of knights and a load of dogs or something.
I think there's knights, but still semi large enemies.
Yeah, I don't remember, to be honest, Jimbo.
There's like in the bottom bit, there's like a little set of stairs that leads to a dead end, and there's a dog at the bottom of the dead end who jumps up at you.
Oh,
and
that's right. Yeah,
the Esther shard, right?
And that's the Esther shard. Yeah. That's right, Mads. Yeah, yeah.
Yes. Is that in that part, or is that?
Sure it is.
That's not once you've gone across the rooftop, is it? Is that down there? I think you might be right, Jim. Regardless, that area is, I know the one you're talking about, and there's an Esther shard, definitely. And thankfully, somebody had left a soapstone mesh. I can't remember what it was. It was something like, I think at the bottom of that one is just the prison.
Just the prison cell.
Because I think when you go... Okay.
You're right. Yes, you are right. It's when you go down the long ladder to get to the winged knight.
Yeah, exactly that. Right, that room that we came into, having just run past the night, if you come out the door and turn left, that takes you up to the next bonfire, which is that the high wall of Lothroth? Or I can't remember the name. Or is it the upper wall? I don't remember. Anyways, we can then from... I think that was the tower on the wall is that next bonfire. So if we come back down those stairs and then now head over the kind of like over the pan tiles, there's a dead dragon there. There's a couple of guys that climb over the walls, And then we get to a group of five or six of these fodder enemies that are there, but yet another passive man, which needs, well, you can just run past them ultimately if you want to. And then, like you say, there's then a ladder that we can climb down. If you stick around there and take out that guy, I think once you've taken them all out, I think it's the first one you see of one of the little,
the little crystal lizards.
Yeah, you're right. You can get a gem from them. You slide down that ladder, and then you've got two routes that you can go on. You can either continue around where there's a couple of guys with crossbows, and you can go down that ladder, and that brings you through the little tunnel where the winged knight is, or you can go off into the building where there's the first encounter you have with a knight with a spear, which is the complete bastards. I don't know what it is. They're the one enemy so far that I'm really struggling to get a read on. No matter how
they've
much
they've got a big shield as well, haven't they? Which makes it difficult. You've got to get around the back of them.
Yeah, and they're really good at feinting an attack and making me look like a complete idiot while I just fresh air swing my parry, and then they'll do a couple of quick stabs, so they can, true of anything in this game, but these guys can take you out quick. I think it's from within this area that there's then a couple of bits that we can work our way down right into this basement, and like you see, there's an Estus shard. There's I think two, if not three, of the big guys that have got halberds and hammers. And then there's a dog that's prowling with them. And then there's the hidden dog as well.
Yeah.
But actually, it must be here in Fact Jimbo, because that's where the cell key is, isn't it?
It is. A good tactic I found was use the high ground, fire an arrow, and to aggro them to come up. And then you can just deal with them one by one.
Yep. So you can pick up the cell key. Did you retrace your steps at that point, or did you keep it for later?
Oh, I can't remember.
I think I retraced.
Yeah,
I went back as well.
Because I'd been kind of like you do the first time you're exploring places. I was kind of eking my way through it quite gingerly. So it's quite nice when you know that probably everything behind you is just a path of death, so you know that you're going to be pretty safe to run back to wherever you've just come from. So I got the Selkies out, right, I'll go back and let this guy out.
But then in the back of your mind, was you thinking, what was his name? He turned up in Bloodborne as well and pushed us over the edge of the cliff. Was it Pat? What's his
Patches? Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm thinking, if I let this guy out, is he going to like kill me or something?
Well, there was
playing with me.
What was his name? You ultimately, the guy from Kareem that you let out of the cell in Dark Souls 1 that ultimately killed the firekeeper there.
Yes, that's right. And it happens in Demon Souls as well. Mm. You let someone out and they go back to like the hub area in the Nexus in Demon Souls.
Yeah.
And they start killing people.
Yeah, so not a good history, but for now, he didn't actually look particularly trustworthy with like a sack over his head as well, basically. he's got a great, I love his voice, especially when you speak to him back in Firelink, and he says like, goodbye and stay safe. he sounds like genuinely concerned for your safety.
Firelink now?
Yes, just to the left of Andre.
Yeah.
Honestly,
it is so worthwhile having a good poke around Firelink, because there are so many NPCs that hide in the shadows that you could quite easily walk past. Like I said, the two that were quite important, I missed for about between the first 3 and 5 hours of the game. I almost completely missed Grey Rat when he was back in there as well.
I've only had a rummage around initially when I got there, so I haven't looked and seen if anybody have gone back there.
He's got a good shop. He sells if you use the bow, then he sells better arrows than what the lady sells. Okay. I think she sells wooden arrows and he sells standard arrows, which have got a slightly better attack power.
Yeah, he's got some new armor. He's got like a hard leather armor set that I bought. They're good. So he's got some stuff he's definitely got some good stuff to look at. So having cleared that out, freed him, we could then retrace the steps back to this point. And so you've got the two options where you could either come from there down into the courtyard to meet the Winged Knight, or you could go around the other way down the ladder and you would come through that little underpass to meet the Winged Knight, but either way, you're going to come to him.
You've got to fight. I was terrified of fighting him.
Yeah, I thought he was going to be kind of a more of a semi-boss character. There's quite a few kind of, but he's just a standard character. Not as bad as I thought in the end. He's got that spinning attack that if you don't get out of the way quick enough of it, that he can take you out quite quickly.
Oh, that's, you're done for.
Yeah, he caught me with that the first time I met him. But I just barely survived, so I actually got him anyway.
Yeah, a cool character model.
I was expecting, I can't remember his name now. You know, in Dark Souls 1, where they fought that really strong knight in the tower that eventually it unlocks a shortcut.
Havel.
I was expecting something like that. Maybe you have to come back to him later on or something like that.
But. Yeah. And there's a couple of little low-level enemies that are in amongst the corpse piles that if you try and run and hide from or something, you'll more likely. I was fighting him and I went obviously close enough to disturb one of them and he was hacking him away. I mean, I was like, just give me a minute, I'll deal with you in a second. I'm trying to kill this big knight at the moment. But
yeah, it's such a cool scene though, isn't it? You've got all these like knights that I presume he's killed,
and that's how I interpreted it. Yeah,
they've all got spears sticking out of them, and then he's just sort of patrolling around. It's like it's all on fire and trash.
Yeah, it's like such a gone fire in the middle. I think a lot of the knights are decapitated as well, aren't they?
Yeah, so, it's a nightmare. It's an absolute state, yeah. I was half expecting them to start coming back to life. You're just like inching in the first time, like, oh God, they're all going to come back to life. And
yep. Yeah, exactly. Then, having beaten his little area, as we emerge out, we're just about the end of the level here, but if you run up the staircase to the right, then you get to the top of that, you come across a little open area where some guys, again, low-level enemies start clambering over the wall, but it gives you your first experience of looping levels and coming back in. And there's a lift there, that which then links back up to the high wall of Lothric bonfire, which is a bit of a godsend for the boss run.
Yes.
If you want to do it that way. That's what I ultimately ended up doing, would be that to get back to this area, is that I would go, you would drop over the wall.
Yeah.
That area where those two dogs were, there's some steps down there. There's a big guy with an axe, another guy that's sleeping by the wall. And then you'd come into that down there. And then you're basically retracing your steps to this area that we're now at. So this is an area that is almost the courtyard in front of the, maybe like the church or the, I think it's a church, isn't it? It looks like the sort of the front entrance to a church.
Which way have we gone? Have we gone so we've come area or the opposite end?
So we've come out from the Winged Knight's behind us.
Yeah.
And we've come out onto the little, it's like that mezzanine level that's got the knights. Yeah. So we've got the two knights walking in front of us and we haven't gone. You could turn
and right. And then there's another one on the far side, isn't there?
Exactly that, So if you wanted, you could run down to the right and that would take you to the boss.
That's to the boss,
Or if you turn left, you've got these two knights that you can either run past or take out, and then you can enter the church. And
then you've got the purple, like, phantom knight just before.
Which is, I mean, this became, I think, our, by some things, our main farming area, didn't it?
Yes.
And you go into the church there, and it's Emma that you meet there. Is it Emma the High Priestess? Or,
That's it. Yeah. Wait, and the Way of the Blue, isn't it?
Yes.
Emma and the Way of the Blue.
Yep. And she also says that she basically tells you where to go. She says you're trying to get to the bottom of the wall or something, I think. And she tells you you need to go there, and she gives you a banner that you need to raise. And that kind of is as much of an indication or about as direct a hint as the game will ever give you, I think. But
she gives you a covenant as well, doesn't she?
Yeah, she does. Yep.
I've not used it yet, but apparently you can summon some members of that covenant into your game when you get invaded.
Yes, the way of blue, isn't it?
Okay. Yeah, so when you get invaded by like another phantom or another character, you can summon in, I assume they're like CPU-controlled characters to sort of fight alongside you.
Mm. Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, that's the way I read it, which sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of really didn't dabble with much of any of that at all. And it was you had to do quite a lot to, if you wanted to get all the achievements. There was quite a lot of faff with it, and I think unfortunately, I think this game turns that up to 11 in terms of the amount of steps you have to go through with different characters to complete all the different covenants and NPC quest lines. But I might, first playthroughs is that I will always just take it as it comes, and you know, it's certainly not going to. I use the guide once I've kind of finished an area, reached a staging point. I'll have a look and see if I miss anything that is going to be particularly useful or anything that I particularly want. But other than that, then you kind of just, I'm not like bothering to Google choices or anything when you get, you know, do you want to join this? Or if somebody has, you know, can you help me type thing, I'll just do what I feel and see what the consequences are. So yeah, this was a, go for it.
Did you see what Roushi put on the Discord? I think it was Roushi. About you can kill Emma.
So yeah, you can hit
her. I've not done it.
Yeah. So I don't think it's in any way a spoiler, but I think this is an area we revisit later in the game.
Yeah.
And then it's I think you can effectively sequence break the game, and if you want, you can fight. You can have a fight here that would sequentially happen much later in the game. I don't think there's any great advantage to doing it. And this is just chat that's been in. It was just open chat in the Discord group anyway. The strong recommendation was don't do it. It's for once, I heeded their advice. I didn't, because I thought that just opens up a can of worms, because it's like I say, once you've seen it, it's no longer optional. So it's but yeah, this was a good little area for farming. I kind of, before I went down to the boss, I rinsed this quite significantly, and I just kept toing and froing to Firelink Shrine to either up my levels or go and buy some new equipment from Grey Rats or improve my weapons, because you were slowly... I think this is the best area for farming the Titanite shards as well. So basically every time I got enough, I'd go back and see Andre.
And the knights drop, like... shields down there and their weapons and armor, and they get like, was it 300 500
350 salts? I think you get for like their shields, and then like their leggings I think you get I think another 300 or 350 I think. Which, so
it's a lot at this level, at like for this, sure this it part is. Of the game, that's like big souls.
Because probably I mean I think now I'm probably I don't even know probably 7,000 souls per level or something like that.
Oh, okay.
Ish.
I'm not there for
you. You know, at this stage, I think you were probably about, you know, 1,500, 2,000 souls per level. So you can start bumping your levels up quite quickly. A good little area, this. I liked it. It's always nice when you find an area within a Dark Souls game. Like, you think, right, this is where I'm going to set my stall out for the next hour or whatever, and this will just be where I kind of, you know, practice some parrying, get some souls. And ideally, just get yourself a wee bit ahead of the curve, so that it just makes the next stage a wee bit easier. So ultimately,
it's that mastery of an area, isn't it? Like, you've brute forced your way through, you've died along the way, and then eventually you get that mastery of the area. You know where the enemies are, and you know how to approach them, and you just sort of master that area. You get it down to a T.
Yeah, and it's also, you know, that probably there's not too much, by the way, of any characters in there that are going to give you much trouble anymore as well. So you can kind of run around with abandon and start to go on proper treasure hunts and find all the nooks and crannies, and you actually start to look forward to the encounters. I guess probably it sounds like we all were, but I was just kind of postponing the inevitable because this was the supposed staging point. So I was just putting it off as long as possible. And I got to the point where I had done everything. I'd got the tower key. I basically had nothing left to do. So I was like, right, I need to go and fight the boss now. So head on down the steps. And I always like it on the first time you come into a boss arena, how it happens organically, the fight. You know, there's no fog wall to cross over or anything. You'll just come into, same as with Udyx Gunder, is that you'll walk into what is very clearly a boss arena.
Yeah.
And you just think, right, how are they gonna drop the boss on me here? But with this one, we're allowed to get to the very far side of the arena where there's some massive metal doors that look like they've been overgrown with a whole lot of vines and foliage and stuff, so looks as though they haven't been opened in some time, and we're allowed to walk right up to it. I don't think you had to interact with it, did you? You just had to approach them,
and it triggers the cutscene, doesn't it?
And out of the adult, did they just came from behind you, didn't they? You didn't actually see where they came from, did you?
Yeah, no, he comes in from behind, doesn't he? I think your character sort of goes to the vines, doesn't he, that are on the door, and then he comes in from behind, I think.
Yeah, so he must have got through that archway at the back. I don't know. Anyways, that's probably not important at this point, but out comes Vort of the Boreal Valley, who is, what is he? Like a night dog? A night?
Yeah, with frost weapons.
Yeah, he kind of looked like a half dog, half boar, or something like that.
In armor,
yeah,
yeah.
A really cool design. I thought he was brilliant. And when he gets his little title card and his little introduction, and then he lets out that scream. He almost sounds like a steam train or something. He almost sounds like he's like steam powered or something. You know, I guess it's maybe like the frost power or something. I don't know, but it's this kind of it's quite a sort of metallic shriek that he lets out. But it was very cool.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, and I died quite a few times.
Did you?
before I'd sort of got the method down. I was trying to roll sideways. I again got him down to like half health.
Yeah.
And then he sort of powers up, doesn't he? Then starts charging at you a bit more.
Yeah. So the first stage, some of Dudek's quite straightforward. You just keep getting around behind him, choppy, choppy, choppy. But then I think the second stage is when he gets his charge. And I think he does three in a row or something, doesn't he? Where he'll charge, turn, charge, turn, charge.
So you need to jump to the sides on those attacks. But apart from that, he's one of those. He's one of the easier Souls bosses for me. I got him on the second go, almost got him on the first go, but got him on the second because he's one of those that can't attack underneath himself. Just stand right up in his stuff all the time and attack him with the sword. It's really, really easy.
Hang out in the Gooch area and just chop away, and it's tried and trusted. These are my favorite bosses. I mean, it sort of harks back to even like the likes of the Asylum Demon and stuff like that in DS1. I love these big bosses where, as long as you can dodge, like you say, you then get a decent window to get underneath them and hack away, and then dodge the attacks and then hack away. But he's got that frost attack, as you were saying as well, Jim, where
that'll get you.
That can take you out quite quickly. But I think all in all, a good first, well, arguably second main boss fight between the two that we've had, between Yrxgunder and then Vort there. Kind of a nice variety between the two, where you've had kind of initially at least the big human, and then you've had the slightly more kind of animal type of boss character. But
I got to this point and I'd beaten both of the bosses, I found that I liked them. They were like good starting bosses, but I was more afraid of meeting the knights. I mean, two knights. If you met the knight with the sword and the knight with the what is it? He's got a spear at the same time. Yeah. That's a lot more dangerous than the boss.
Oh, it's important. You get ping ponged between the two of them as well, and you'll get staggered by one, and that allows the other one just to chop at you.
Yeah, exactly.
You'll
just get
battered back and forth between them. But
get that bow out and get aggro in. That's how I do it.
I don't have the patience for that. I just have to go up and chop them and just.
If you can get one at a time, then though aggro, get one at a time, and
I just wait because they do walk. They almost walk an opposite route. Yeah. So I just wait until they're at either extremity and just walk close enough to get to kite one of them towards me. And then
that's what I do as well.
Take him out and then go and get the other one. But it's a satisfying area to revisit now that you've got some slightly more useful kit, and you can you can properly kick them around a bit. But that takes us up to the official stopping point.
Yes. And that's where we all stopped.
Have either of you, you won't have done. The boss soul, still not.
I haven't converted mine. I would, because I need to look at that. So you take it, this little king that's sitting on his throne back in Firelink. I believe you take them to him, and he converts them into items for you.
I thought that was later in the game that I would figure out what the
same.
Use those for.
Okay.
Yeah. If you speak to him, he says as much. And you take the boss souls to him, and I think you can get either unique weapons or. Rings and things I think they're going to be useful in a game. I haven't converted them yet.
We didn't get a boss soul for the first mini boss. Gunbeer, did we? No. So no, we only have that
one. You got the sword, didn't you? I suppose the coiled sword.
Oh yeah, that we used for the fire. Okay.
Mm.
Yeah, that's a very good point, actually. I'm not entirely sure about that. So I guess in terms of, you know, this was very much, we deliberately chosen these staging points for this reason. This was meant to be the introduction and basically allowing us to find our feet and settle back into it. Where do you guys stand on where we're at and what you've seen so far?
It's been absolutely wonderful, mate. Absolutely wonderful. I loved it. And the next area, which I haven't been in at all, is beautiful.
No one has.
it's anything but beautiful.
It's anything but beautiful. But it's peak Dark Souls.
I love
exploring that area. So if you've been well behaved and you've played along and haven't gone past the staking point yet, you've got a treat to come in the Undead Settlement.
What we'll do, because Chris Atwell, who very kindly provided us with the staging points, they're pinned in our Discord channel, but he has very kindly also recorded a clip to put into this episode. So what we'll do, we'll play his clip now. He'll tell you what the staging points are. Obviously, this is the first one, and then he'll tell you what the next one's going to be. And I think we're going to have five episodes altogether. Yep. So there's a further four staging points to come. So maybe if you haven't played any further or you don't want to know what's happened beyond this, then listen to his staging points and then stop, and then we're going to try our best not to say anything else about what happens beyond that, but we may stray into a little bit of conversation about what happens beyond this boss fight. So here's Chris with his staging points, and we'll be back with you very shortly.
Guys, hi, it's Chris Atwell. I wanted to sort of talk about Dark Souls 3. I was asked to provide some staging points. I'd played this game before on release, and I had been talking about it quite a lot on Discord about how much I enjoyed it, and spoke to a few of the guys in person while we were at the Bury Arcade Club, and offered just to sort of suggest some staging points just to see how things floated and see whether people agreed with what I chose. And we've I think already got the first staging point, which is past the first boss, which is Vort of the Boreal Valley. And this includes the opening area, and this I'm sure you've talked about this at length, but this is a brilliant area. I enjoyed going through this the first time, but revisiting this after playing through Demon Souls and Dark Souls 1 and 2, it's definite callbacks to some of those games, especially the beginning of Demon Souls with the dragons and the battlements and exploring this ruined castle, and loved this bit. And definite callbacks to like the Undead Village in the beginning of Dark Souls. Yeah, a little bit towards that Dark Souls 2 as well, but just really enjoyed this, and I'm hoping you guys have enjoyed that. Moving on to the second staging point, which was to play to the bit after the defeat of the first of the real Lords of Cinder. So the main aim of this game is to find and defeat the Lords of Cinder, to regather them, to kindle the flame, and to keep the fire burning, or not. So the first Lord of Cinder is already present on his throne, the little weird guy that you see at Firelink Shrine, and you see four other thrones, and you get an idea who the other Lords of Cinder are from the opening cinematic, in case anybody missed that. And the first Lord of Cinder that we go after is actually a group of people called the Abyss Watchers, and they're really cool guys who all stand and salute with their swords. And I thought this was a great next section, because it opens up some really cool areas to traverse, some bits, including, unfortunately, a swamp. But the swamp is probably the least offensive of the swamps that we've visited so far. So, let's see how people get on with that. And it also has some really cool boss fights along the way. I'm looking forward to seeing what people make of that.
Right, back with you. And that is the point at which, if you want to go off and explore through to the next staging point, we will not take it in any way personally if you stop the podcast right now and run off and get Dark Souls on, if you haven't already done so. But yeah, Jens, just really, I guess, to summarise, you were saying, Mads, this has been a very strong start. Where do you think it starts? Where does it stand for you in terms of opening areas for the Soulsborne games?
I'm not sure. Pretty much the best I've seen so far. I mean, it's been so good. There's been so many great things, big enemies that you need to fight, and those knights that were so damn tough and still can pose a challenge, and some good basic boss fights so you can get into the bosses again. It's been great. The exploration, which is what this game is all about, apart from the fighting, of course, has been really good as well, already here in the early areas. So, yeah. I'm loving it, mate. Loving it.
Yeah. Anything that's different from the others that you're preferring or that you wished had been carried over from previous series?
I like the new stuff, like the new mechanics. The powered up attacks in two-handed mode, for example, is great fun to play with. I like running towards enemies and stabbing them, jumping and stabbing them. And even the kick, even though it's hard to pull off, can be quite good against the knights, for example, because you make them stumble a bit, and then you get an opening to slash them. So the new mechanics, the new battle mechanics, I'm still getting used to them, but I really appreciate them.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I would agree. Jim?
Yeah, I'm loving it. Like I said, really, before we started recording it, at the minute, I know we're still early doors, I think about 11 hours or something like that I've put in, just mostly into this, like, this opening area. But it's just been like the perfect blend of Souls, of all the Souls games, with like a little sort of sprinkling of Bloodborne, which is just, it's just what I wanted, to be honest, so far.
Yeah.
I'm glad that all that grinding, that horrible grinding in Bloodborne has gone. Yeah, just loving it. Absolutely loving it. In terms of opening areas, I would say I like that initial area, I suppose, like the tutorial area, the cemetery. I don't think it's as interesting to go back to as like Things Betwixt from Souls 2, because I remember going back to that and it felt like there was loads of stuff there that you could go back and unlock later on. There's a couple of like ogres that you could fight, were a little bit sort of higher, you could fight when you was a little bit higher level and stuff like that. But I think as an opening level, I think it does what it sets out to do, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think the only thing that this has is the lizard, the blue lizard.
Yeah. I think you're right, though. I think probably if we're taking this as a whole and maybe comparing it to, for example, from Dark Souls 1, maybe Firelink Shrine and the Undead Burg or something like that, you would find, I guess it was slightly different because Firelink Shrine was very much kind of a hub and spoke, wasn't it? So you could,
you had
instant access to quite a few areas. You could go down to New Londo, or you could go to the catacombs. You could go, you could go pretty much everywhere from there, couldn't you? Whereas, but other than that, Lizard, particularly the sort of the first section, you know, the Cemetery of Ash, where you're running from there to Firelink Shrine, there's nothing really that you would go back for. There's no reason. There may be later in the game, I don't know, but there's nothing. There's no reason to go back there at all. But then I guess it is kind of, it's a separate area now, and maybe that's why you ultimately warp out of Firelink Shrine. I don't know, but I'm kind of with you guys, to be honest. I think it's hard to say, and it's hard to make comparisons sometimes between them, because I don't think they'll ever be. Nothing can ever match that first Soulsborne experience, I don't think. And I think DS1, when I think about how much I initially hated it and then, you know, how much I utterly, utterly love it now, and I've still got pretty much every enemy seared into my memory as to where they are, especially in that opening section of Dark Souls 1. Mm-hmm. But what I would say is that, you know, this game has done a bloody good job of making you feel the way that Dark Souls 1 or made me feel with my first proper Soulsborne experience, in terms of it feels like they've cut down on maybe a lot of the chaff that's in there. It's just kind of minimal introduction and then kind of into the good stuff, a nice early boss fight, you know, meeting all the main players there at Firelink Shrine, and then the Lothric itself, the High Wall of Lothric, is just a really enjoyable area to explore. Big enough without being overwhelming. I would say as well, I don't know how you guys are finding it. I think so far, I would say that the bonfire placement has been more generous in this game.
Yeah, for sure.
Compared to others.
Yeah.
There's never been a point where I've thought, come on, you need to kind of, there needs to be a bonfire now, and then it's another still quite a bit to go. I haven't got to the same level of frustration maybe that I got with Bloodborne or with Dark Souls 1, where you were thinking, I don't have it in me to do that all over again.
Yeah, I think in the next area, the first area that we'll cover in the next episode, it felt like initially it felt like a long run down to that first bonfire.
Yeah. It's funny, because you're going through it so gingerly and the stakes are so high, and usually you're fighting enemies that are probably considerably more powerful than you.
Yeah.
Your progress is so slow that it would have you believe that you've just traversed miles and then subsequently. But in many respects, it's felt like a greatest hits tour so far, this opening section, and I've loved it. I really love this new mechanic of the being able to allocate or kind of apportion how you want with your Estus flasks, etc. All in all, a very strong start to things there. You know, if it keeps anything even close to this throughout the game, then it's gonna be great. I have to say, I'm looking forward to whatever point in the game it will be this game's equivalent of an Ornstein moment. I want you're ready for that enemy that has you butting your head and just like
it'll happen, won't it? I'm never gonna do this.
You know, you're gonna be absolutely just tearing up in frustration, but
that Orphan of Cos moment.
yeah, absolutely. I'd say next time around we will we'll have Chris with us and he can give us a wee bit of information as to what he went build wise and then we'll just pick up where we've left off and cover it. So as I understand it, I think the next section will cover the undead settlements, which is the next area, and then there's a couple of areas that are ultimately going to take us up to the Watchers of the Abyss. So the Abyss Watchers, isn't it? That's the next staging point.
I am dreading that. Just from that opening cinematic. I remember putting my on the Bloodborne. I can't remember what there was three of those knights in that little arena where you drop down, where you go in the woods, at the end of the woods.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, I spent so many attempts on that.
Oh, they were tough.
Yep.
you'd get rid of one, and then the others two, I think, would, like, power up.
Yeah, they all had different attacks, and whoever you killed last would go into a special ninja mode.
Rage mode.
Oh, that's right. This is one where I hate to say it, but I did it first time.
Oh god, I did it 50th time.
Yeah, but it is just it is these games to a T. Is it more for, if you don't do it first time, and sometimes you can, because you're taking you're really taking your time on the first one, and trying to like learn move sets and everything, that I think probably you've got one of your best chances is on the first go.
Yeah, maybe.
And then after that, you just start to psych yourself out, and you're already thinking about what's to come before you've even got, rather than just dealing what's in front of you. You're trying to second guess everything, and some of the fights that you've had over the times with some are just stuff of legends, but I'm sure there is plenty of that to come. Anything in closing before we wrap up?
Not from me. I think we've covered it.
Cool. Well, if you're still listening at this point, just to say, this is obviously a very active one on our Discord channel. And I know there are a few first timers, both for the games and fairly new arrivals in the Discord channel as well. So obviously a big welcome to you guys. And I genuinely don't think you will find a better place or a more welcoming place to come and experience a Soulsborne game for the first time. There's so much help on hand in our Discord group, so come and make full use of it. Special shouts out, as always, Patrick over at Retrospectives Podcast is the master of Soulsborne games in terms of, particularly if you want to drill down into some of the mechanics, but if you've got a question at any level, post it in there, and he's always very, very good about answering these things. Likewise with Mobbin, he's brilliant, particularly on the lore side of things. He loves to really drill down into all the item descriptions, and if you want to know what's going on or make more sense of it than what we've managed to do, he's a great source of information. And then there's just a few other guys, Senior Swag, Donnie as well. There's a few guys in there that Indie Boss have played these games, I think, a fair bit, and are just always on hand to offer some top tips and a bit of a somewhere someone to vent to when Dark Souls gets its better off you, which it undoubtedly will, but then also to encourage you to let you know that you could do it. So I can say hopefully there is just plenty more of this to come, which I'm sure there will be.
Yeah, I did see this afternoon as well, Morpin.
Yeah, he's doing it.
He's doing the coin. I can't believe it. He's crazy.
I didn't watch that much of him last time around, but I'm going to make a point of probably it'll prevent me from getting carried away and playing too much of this. I'm going to sit and watch some of his streams because it is, you know, as if the game wasn't hard enough. So
yeah, Maupin is streaming himself playing the game, and whenever he finds a weapon or a piece of equipment, he'll flip a coin, and if it goes thumbs up, then he'll equip it. So then he'll have to use that until he finds a new weapon. And when I was watching him, I was just watching a bit of his YouTube, he was very, very bad at trying to kill the dogs because I think he equipped some, like, some glove or something like that. Can you get a glove or that's
I know that
not a weapon, but just some, what do you call them? Noggle the busters, something like that.
Yeah.
Oh, and I've seen a broken, there's like broken weapons that you can get as well.
It seemed as if he was wielding no weapon but a little thing on his hand, and he was trying to get close enough to the dogs to kill them, and he couldn't.
And I know that he bashed something to death with a shield as well. It's just, I mean, it takes a set, that is a whole new level of skill to be playing it the way he's playing it. And,
yes.
Thank you for the entertainment that it provides us with. And again, you know, obviously big thanks to you guys and to everybody in our wonderful little community for this, for the weekend, for everything. So we'll look forward to catching up. I guess, I don't know, it's probably not going to be long till we're recording the next one, is it?
Yeah.
You're probably not far off being ready, are you?
How dare you accuse me of such things? I don't know what you're talking about. this is great. I can now go and venture into the Undead Settlement, so I will go and do that.
Yeah, legally.
Yes, with my third character. Excellent. good. All right, gents. Well, thank you. Pleasure as always. And stay safe and enjoy your Dark Soulsing.
See you later.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.